Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Some of you have probably seen this week's cover story, Time Magazine, Are Kids Too Wired? A very interesting story because it's not only adults that are carrying around cell phones and iPods and laptops and all the rest. It's also kids. It's becoming a phenomenon in elementary schools where kids are showing up with phones that start ringing during kindergarten class, where you've got kids that are walking on the sidewalk with earphones in each ear, and you have kids living in their own little worlds, as a matter of fact. And by the way, that doesn't even get to the fact that they're listening to and watching a lot of inappropriate stuff, having some inappropriate conversations on the Internet and through instant messaging and all the rest. Time talks about the scientific element to all this. There is some evidence that this is problematic for the intellectual development, cognitive development of young people. I think we as Christian parents probably have some even deeper concerns than that. I'm going to invite you to talk about it in just a moment. First, a review of issues in the news. By the way, I am glad to be broadcasting today live from Fort Worth, Texas. I'm here on the campus of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. I'm here to deliver lectures and for a meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society. Greatly appreciate the hospitality of the folks here. Folks, we always need to be very careful when we hear the name of Jesus invoked in terms of a specific political platform. And there is always the danger that the gospel, that indeed the name of Christ, will be co-opted for a political argument or a political platform, the platform of any political party. And we know as Christians that there are some very clear principles that we are to struggle to apply in the political context. We know that we are accountable as Christians for everything we do, including every dimension of our political lives. But every once in a while, you hear something that just makes you scratch your head and begin to wonder, is this a legitimate use of the name of Christ? Is this a situation in which we can invoke Christ as an authority on a political issue? At odds here with this question is Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York State and a comment she made about immigration. Let's listen to the comment and let's try to figure this out.
It is certainly not in keeping with my understanding of the scriptures, because this bill would literally criminalize the Good Samaritan and probably even Jesus himself.
Okay, well, let's be on the record as against criminalizing Jesus. So let's get that down. And yet this particular political statement, this rhetoric, was in light of the question of immigration. Now, we've talked about that on this program. Our agenda here is Christian worldview analysis. And when we tried to talk about the issue of immigration, that's where I think you'll have Christians of goodwill, Christians of sound convictions, who are going to disagree about exactly what form an immigration policy should take. Obviously, there are huge human rights concerns. There are huge concerns just about what a nation can handle in terms of having persons coming in, a vast influx. The huge migrations of persons that came across the Atlantic, for instance, from Europe in successive waves, especially just before the end of the 19th century and in the early 20th century, really helped to make America what it is today. We are, as many have said, a nation of immigrants. And yet, at no point has this country had completely unrestrained, unregulated immigration. And I think it's fair to say that no country would ever simply accept a policy of unrestrained, unregulated immigration. We have a huge immigration problem. The big problem is not legal immigration, but illegal immigration. We have a system that's broken, and even if you just take one political party on the Republican side, you really have diametrically opposed philosophies about how to handle the immigration question. All of it in terms of justice and in terms of what government has at stake in the question. But when you hear Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton suggesting that a proposal to clamp down pretty hard on illegal immigration is, well, to use her own words, something that would criminalize the Good Samaritan and probably even Jesus himself. I just want us to hear that in order to say, let's call that out of bounds. Let's just suggest right up front that, number one, the biblical story that she mentions here has nothing to do whatsoever with immigration in any form. The parable of the Good Samaritan has nothing to do with the Good Samaritan being a Samaritan immigrant to Israel. That is not the point at all, and it's just a gross misuse of the scriptures to try to throw that in there. But then criminalizing Jesus, let's just ask a question. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Where does Jesus speak about immigration? Number one, Jesus was speaking those words in the first century before the rise of the modern nation state. In the first century, the only citizenship that was really important in the eyes of anyone in the Mediterranean world was Roman citizenship, and Jesus did not hold that citizenship. And I think this is just such a gross misuse of the scriptures and of the name of Christ. And let me just say again, this can happen along the fault lines of any political ideology. It can happen among persons of any political party. But when it happens, we need to call it for what it is, a misuse of the name of Christ and a misuse of scripture. What is the Christian position in America? What is our Christian worldview perspective on immigration? The fact that we must have a just and equitable system of immigration. What that looks like is up for debate. And I'll just tell you right up front, I'm not smart enough to figure that out and presume that I can just dictate what that would be. But uncontrolled borders are just, frankly, not an option. And also, hypocrisy is not an option. And when you institutionalize illegal immigration, you're adopting a hypocritical approach. You're actually rewarding those who break the law, and you are penalizing those who do not break the law. So we know that that's broken. How to fix it? I think that's a legitimate question. And perhaps one we ought to take up in another conversation. While we're speaking about issues foreign and domestic, the citation of foreign law in American courts is again in the news and in a very helpful way. Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has been making statements about this, and I have held off a few days making mention of it because I wanted to see how the secular press responded. And I have to tell you, they came through. And I'm a little bit surprised, but I'm very pleased. As a matter of fact, the Washington Post came through in a lead editorial castigating Ruth Bader Ginsburg for her comments about citing international law. Now, what she said is, basically, that anyone who does not believe that the American courts and the Supreme Court should be citing foreign courts is basically, and this is what she said, is on an irrational fringe. Well, as the Washington Post pointed out, she's sitting right next to some of these people on the nation's high court. That's not exactly a very civil way to put it. But furthermore, it's a way of trying to shut down debate on a legitimate issue rather than having the debate. And that's exactly what you've got going on here. And just to read from the Washington Post editorial, went on to say Justice Ginsburg was defending what is, in our view, a perfectly defensible proposition, that American courts should learn from legal systems with values and a commitment to democracy similar to our own. Yet in doing so, she managed to link those who take an opposing view to the legacies of slavery and apartheid and to paint them as fueling the irrational fringe in its threats against judges. It was just an illegitimate way to make the argument. And even though the Washington Post says, look, we agree with her argument in terms of citing foreign law, we disagree with the way she said it. Now, I disagree with her argument. I think for an American court to cite foreign law, number one, is, let's go back to that word, hypocritical. And I love the way Justice Antonin Scalia goes at this when he says, look, you know, liberal judges in America love to cite European courts on sex. They don't want to cite Asian courts on sex. They want to cite foreign courts when it serves their argument. They don't want to go to Islamic courts and cite the same thing. So they're just being very, very selective. And it was good to have the Washington Post come through on this. And when we try to nail the press for when they really miss it, we need also to credit when they get it. And even though we would still disagree on the substance of the issue, I'm glad to say the Washington Post is underlining how illegitimate that was. How do you figure out some of these contentious issues? You know, every once in a while, something comes up that just makes you think in an angular way about something you never thought about before, such as this story. The United Methodist Church has decided not to hold its 2012 General Conference in Richmond, Virginia. Why? Because the name of the city's minor league baseball team is the Braves. That's right, because that is supposedly an insult to Native Americans, who, by the way, say it's not an insult. On their behalf, because they don't know they're supposed to be insulted, the United Methodist General Conference has been moved from Richmond, and the press release doesn't say where it's going, except it's likely that it will be in Tampa, Florida. Tampa is home to the Devil Rays, a Major League Baseball team, and supposedly there are no Devil Ray activists who are suggesting that that is an illegitimate use of the name. But obviously, this gets down to this whole issue of political correctness. How in the world are you going to handle this? Now, what would have been the supreme irony, I guess, is if they moved from Richmond to, Atlanta, or the Atlanta Braves? But they can't do that. They obviously can't go to Washington with the Redskins. I don't know. In Tampa Bay, don't you have the Buccaneers? Maybe the Pirates aren't really happy with that either. The 2004 conference in Pittsburgh passed a resolution to avoid holding meetings and events in cities that sponsor sports teams brandishing Native American teams and names and symbols, which the resolution called, quote, a blatant expression of racism. Now, I'm a Baptist talking about United Methodists. I mean no ill will, And all of us, whatever our denomination, all of us are capable of saying and doing some pretty stupid things. But on something like this, I just have to go back and ask, is this really where we need to draw a line? Is this where we need to say the church must take a stand and we're going to move from Richmond, Virginia because the minor league baseball team there is called the Braves? Folks, we've been following this issue from time to time, and as you'll remember, there are a lot of Native Americans who say we're not troubled by this at all. We're living in a strange day. We're talking about some very strange issues. But today we're going to talk about one of genuine consequence. Just how wired do you want your kids to be? Coast to coast from Fort Worth, Texas, this is the Albert Bowler Program. Welcome back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. The topic is Time Magazine's cover story on wired families. It really starts out talking about wired kids. In fact, the cover story's title is, Are Kids Too Wired for Their Own Good? What Science Tells Us About the Pluses and Minuses of Doing Everything at Once. You know, the picture on the front pretty much says it all. Here you have a kid, I guess a young teenage boy, and there's a laptop, a PDA, an iPod, a cell phone. In fact, he's got two cell phones. He's got earphones in each ear. And he's got a strap around his shoulder, undoubtedly connecting him to other devices as well. You know this picture? You may know this kid. He may be living in your house. And there may be multiple of them in your house. There is a study going on that is really telling us a whole lot about where this is going for us. It really focuses on one family. And what we have here are the Cox family. They have twin children. They have a boy named Piers and a girl whose name is Bronte, and they're both heavily wired, and the parents are also just about as wired as well. And now, when I say wired, I mean really wired. Let me just read you something in the story here. It says, by all standard space-time calculations, the four members of the family occupy the same three-bedroom home in Van Nuys, California, but psychologically each exists in his or her own little universe. Georgiana, that's the mom who works for a display cabinet maker, is tidying up the living room as Bronte works, that's the daughter, not that her daughter notices. Stephen, age 49, who juggles jobs as a squash coach, fitness trainer, event planner, and head of a cancer charity, has wolfed down his dinner alone in the kitchen, having missed supper with the kids. He, too, typically spends the evening on his cell phone returning emails, but when he can nudge Bronte off the computer. He says here, one gets obsessed with one's gadgets. Now, here's something that really is going to catch your attention, zeroing in on the kids. Zooming in on Piers, that's the 14-year-old boy's screen, gives a pretty good indication of what's on his hyperkinetic mind. Okay, there's a Google's images window open where he's chasing down pictures of Keira Knightley. Good ones get added to a snazzy Windows Media Player slideshow that serves as his personal e-shrine to the actress. Several IM, that's instant messaging windows, for those of you who don't know. They're also open, revealing such penetrating conversations as this one with a MySpace pal. The boy says, what's up? What up, dude? Not much you. Same. And by the way, this is all in code. And I have to say, without the explanation from time, I wouldn't even know the code. Naturally, iTunes is open, and Piers is blasting a mix of Queen, AC/DC, classic rock, and hip-hop. Somewhere on the screen, there's a Word file in which Piers is writing an essay for his English class. Quote, I usually finish my homework at school, he explains, but if not, I pop a book open on my lap in my room, and while the computer is loading, I'll do a problem or write a sentence. Then while mail is loading, I do more. I get it done a little bit at a time. His 14-year-old sister Bronte says, you just multitask. My parents always tell me I can't do homework while listening to music, but they don't understand that it helps me concentrate. Now, here's the key part of the Time story. The Coxes are one of 32 families in the Los Angeles area participating in an intensive four-year study of modern family life led by anthropologist Eleanor Ox, director of UCLA's Center on Everyday Lives of Families. Now, listen carefully. Here's one of the findings. Her team has observed, looking at what happens at the end of the workday when parents and kids reunite, that they don't. Quote, we saw that when the working parent comes through the door, the other spouse and the kids are so absorbed by what they're doing that they don't give the arriving parent the time of day. The returning parent, generally the father, was greeted only about one-third of the time. That's right. This family is so wired, they're so living in their own universes to the extent that when dad comes home, they don't even recognize him. Only a third even greeted him when he came in the house. About half the time, the kids ignored him, and I'm reading from the report, or didn't stop what they were doing, multitasking and monitoring their various electronic gadgets. This is Eleanor Ox of UCLA speaking. We also saw how difficult it was for parents to penetrate the child's universe. We have so many videotapes of parents actually backing away, retreating from kids who are absorbed by whatever they're doing. Well, not in my house. You know, I just can't imagine this. I can't imagine that that our biblical picture of family life is down to this. Every single member of the family so wired that he, she is living in his or her own universe. And what does this say about kids themselves anyway? I mean, where's the parenting going on here? I mean, I'd be a little bit concerned. Well, that's an understatement. If I discovered that my son was creating his own electronic shrine to an actress, a Hollywood figure, a singer, or whatever. And these kids are wired, I mean, that's for sure, and the cover picture on Time is just kind of a hint of what's actually going on. Now, interestingly, Time has a scientific, a medical aspect to this as well. They try to point out that psychologists and psychiatrists are increasingly convinced that the development of the cerebral cortex means that multitasking is an age stage thing. In other words, they say very young children really can't do it, and older adults can't do it. It's really young adults. From late adolescence to somewhere around middle adulthood, and for my own personal reasons, I'm not going to define that real carefully today, but that somewhere in there, there is an ability to multitask that can be lost. And what they're saying is these kids think this is what they can do, that they think they can get by doing their homework, writing an essay while instant messaging, listening to music, watching a video, and talking on the cell phone all at once. And they may think they're pulling it off, but they're not going to pull it off. It's not going to work. They're going to find themselves unable to keep up, and they're going to find themselves distracted. Well, I think they were probably distracted before they ever got there. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Again, 877-893-TALK. I would love to hear from some parents out there. You know, frankly, there may be some kids who need to call. True confession can take place today, too. But what do we say about a situation in which families are so wired that they don't even notice when dad comes home? And I think it's fascinating that these families allowed themselves to be studied this way because they had to believe this was going to be bad news. And it turns out it's probably even worse than they thought. What does it mean when mom and dad and sister and brother all live in separate worlds and where the parents back off of the kids because the kids are so absorbed in this stuff? Now, again, I don't want to be hypocritical. We've got electronic gadgets and all kinds of devices in our home. I travel with an iPod. I've got an iPod with me most of the time, although it's not in my ears most of the time. My PDA, my wife right now is out there saying, you know, if he doesn't admit that he's got that PDA with him all the time and then he's checking it all the time, then he's a hypocrite. Well, sweetheart, you'd be right. I do. I have it. In fact, it's right here. If it got too far from me, I'd be nervous. But my kids don't have one. And a cell phone? Yeah, I got my daughter a cell phone the day she turned 13. And I got it for her for me. I wanted to know where she is at all times, and I wanted her to be able to call me at all times, but it's not for chatting with her friends, and we pay the bill, and we know who she's been talking to and how long. You know, this is just one of those deals where, you know, where's the parenting going on here? Again, the phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do we do about this? You know, we're at the stage now where I think we need to be honest and say we may need to admit that we're too wired, especially our kids. Our kids are just too wired, and we need to take a step back. But just doing so indiscriminately without some thought probably isn't going to help much. We need to think this through. What is our right approach as parents? How do we make these decisions? I want to know how you're making decisions with your family. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're live today from Fort Worth, Texas, and I can tell you this is a problem just about anywhere in the world. I got on an airplane, and by the way, I would not get on an airplane if I could help it without having some electronic devices that I'll be using along the way. And, of course, once you get to 10,000 feet and they chime and the pilot says you can do it, lest you bring the aircraft down with your electronic devices. And, you know, I can lose myself on a plane. I can put classical music on and put those iPod buds in my ear, and I can block out the screaming kid two rows back. I think that's a great thing. But I don't want to block my family out. And we're not going to sit that way in the home. We're not going to sit that way at the dinner table. And my kids aren't going to retreat to their bedrooms to listen in their own electronic cocoons and lose themselves in that world. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's talk about it. How much is too much? How much is too little? How much is just right? I don't think that's necessarily one answer for every question. But when you see a report like this, we know there are a lot of families where this is seriously out of sync. 877-893-8255, coast to coast, this is the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. Studies indicate that 82% of 7th graders are online, and about 50% of 5th graders also online. 5th graders, 10-year-olds, online, and that's pretty constant to instant messaging and all the rest. And the recent study of American adolescents done at NYU indicates that they may be online or connected to some digital communication environment about 8.5 hours a day. 8.5 hours. Add that up. We used to worry just about television, and yet television is passive. In fact, we used to complain it was passive. Maybe we ought to now be kind of glad it was passive, because who knows what kind of active communication is going on back and forth here. The big question is, too much, too little? How do we make these evaluations as Christians, as Christian parents, as Christian young people? Where do we go? Let's go to Dee, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, yes, I think we need to develop some best demonstrated practices for raising our children in today's environment. We have them at our offices, so I think we should do it now. And I can tell you, my son has his iPod on, he's IMing, he's doing his homework, and he's also watching a streaming video. I mean, you know, it's crazy. And then when we take him, when we go to school in the morning, he's got his iPod in his ears. So our communication is effectively zero at this point, which is a scary thought.
Okay, Dee, let me ask you a question. I really appreciate your call. How old is your son?
He's 14.
Okay, let me ask you just a straightforward, honest question. Why don't you unplug him?
Well, I can tell you that I did move the computer from the bedroom to the kitchen, and he is now going to participate in sporting activities because the lack of physical activity was interrupting his sleeping patterns as well, because he was so wired by the time it was time to go to bed, he wasn't sleeping. And so I have done some things, but I would like to hear what a psychologist has to say about some, you know, some best demonstrated practices for how we deal with the technological revolution.
Well, you raise a good question about how to make these decisions. I'm not sure to whom we should turn here. Dee, to tell you the truth, you know, the psychologists, they have their angle on this, and some of them are telling us to chill, just not to worry about it. The kids will be kids, and they're just working these things out. Others, like the psychiatrist that I quoted here from the Time magazine story, saying, look, they're learning some bad lessons and some bad habits. I do think this is where parents really have to jump in. And, Dee, I would just encourage you, you know, reach over to that iPod and pull the earplug out and just make your son talk to you. And you are still in control. Maintain that control. You are God's authority in his life for that control. And we can't assume that a 14-year-old is going to make the right decisions. Surrounded by all this paraphernalia and enticed by all these devices, I know at 14 I would have used them all as much as I could have if my parents had allowed it, which I don't think they would. And so I would just encourage you really to jump in there and set your own rules about where you think that should be. How many hours a day? You know, and maybe hours plural is too much. But I'll tell you the truth, I don't think the iPod is the enemy, and I don't believe that for a moment, but I do think the indiscriminate use of any of this, and by the way, Dee, good job moving the computer from the bedroom to the kitchen, bravo, that's one of my main points, don't allow kids internet access by themselves, way too dangerous, but you also need to find out what's on that iPod, and I'm not just talking about taste here, I'm talking about content. And I really appreciate your call, Dee, and maybe some other parents will help us to think this through, some other folks. We got Sam on the line calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. And I'm a 17-year-old, and I can definitely identify with the wired culture. I do have an iPod, and I do use the Internet quite a bit. But I think it's important to remember here not to build up all this hysteria over the objects. It's not the objects that take away family time. It's the people who choose to indulge themselves in too many hours in the objects. And I think we need to emphasize that, you know, for young people like me, we need to get back to the Bible and get back to spending the most time on what God says the most time should be spent on, and that's Christ and other people. And I think that's what young people like me really struggle with, is because we tend to enjoy, you know, a kind of a secluded virtual reality. But I think that's the key. It's not the objects, but the principle of time spending.
Sam, great clarification. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Let me just ask you, you know, how much do you use these devices? How many hours a day would you estimate?
Well, let's see. I use an iPod pretty much for all my music needs. So anytime I listen to music, I would use the iPod. I use the internet basically for blogging, and I would estimate that I probably blog about up to an hour and a half a day, no more than that.
Well, Sam, I really appreciate that word from you, that clarification. It's not the objects, and certainly it's not. It is the time, and it's the attentiveness. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, the Bible actually speaks to that. It doesn't use the word attentiveness, but it does speak a great deal about attention, where our focus should be. And you're exactly right, Sam, speaking with the incredible maturity there, but a focus on Christ. I have to tell you, I had to smile, Sam, when you spoke about your iPod beating your music needs. I'm not sure it's a need, but I do share that with you. It sometimes feels like one. The phone number, 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Moeller. Conversation started on this one. Even if some families aren't having conversations in the living room or in the dining room, we're having one right here. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about just how wired our kids should be. And I'm just thankful there are a lot of parents, maybe for the first time, are beginning to wonder about that question. And just hear me. You know, God's vision of family life is that parents be deeply involved in the lives of their children, and that children be deeply involved in family life. And what we have in modern culture, the culture of modernity, of the modern age, began to pull people away from the focus upon the family. And what you had was people pulled into the workplace, pulled into institutionalized educational settings, pulled into avocational interests, pulled in so many different directions, and many of those directions in themselves good, but not wholesomely helpful for the family. And furthermore, there are a lot of churches that sometimes just set themselves up to be something less than they ought to be in terms of encouraging family life. And sometimes even churches begin to pull people apart when you have children going in one direction, youth going in a different direction, parents going into a different direction, single people going here, married people going there, and you lose the organic unity of God's people gathered together in worship and for service. And so, you know, much less do you have the reality where people are just sitting around all connected to their own electronic gadgets. I have to tell you an anecdote, though. When I was on my way here flying through Atlanta, I stopped in, yeah, admit it, an electronics store in the airport. That tells you a whole lot, that the Atlanta airport has an entire electronics store therein. And in there, there was a man who was purchasing a PDA with the Bible on it, and he intended, he said, to preach out of it. Now, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. He's not going to find the text he's going to want, and he's going to stand up there in front of, I don't know how many people, fumbling around with the buttons of a PDA. Somehow, I can't picture the Apostle Paul doing that. Let's go to Derek calling from Rahway, New Jersey. Let's see on XM 170. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey, Dr. Moeller. I just wanted to make a point. What you effectively have is you have these devices that are plugged into the child that are effectively raising them. They're planting seeds that the parents don't know, you know, are being planted. And then one morning, you know, your child wakes up and there's this big change and you're like, what happened? And it's something that happened overnight. And it's because you don't know what kind of things are being planted in your child.
Yeah, the alchemy of the heart. I mean, that's true. You don't know what kind of seeds are being planted in the heart. You don't know what's going to come out. And when I did a four-week series at our church in Louisville, my home church where I'm a teaching pastor at Highview Baptist Church, and we started talking with the parents about this, one of the things I raised is that we have to listen to our kids talk, and that means we really have to talk to them. And when you listen to them talk, you're going to hear what is on their minds. Things are going to slip out, cultural references, expressions and all this. And where are they getting a lot of this? They're getting a lot of it right from the kind of media you're talking about. And Derek, a lot of it's just not good. In fact, a lot of it is really, really bad stuff. And, you know, I talk to parents all the time who have intercepted their children's emails, or they have intercepted instant messaging. And they're all of a sudden aware of some of these things going on. There is a viciousness. And by the way, I talked to another youth minister the other day who told me that one of the key things they face right now is the meanness of a lot of this communication. There's just a viciousness among kids, even among a lot of girls, just a viciousness among them that is really very dangerous. Derek, we appreciate that call and a reminder from New Jersey of just how serious parents must be in dealing with this. Let's go to Jessica calling from Indiana. Go ahead, Jessica.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Moeller. Thank you for taking my call today. I'll try to get my point across before my cell phone battery dies. I am a kindergarten teacher, and I struggle every day to hold the children's attention. I see so many behavior problems, and I really feel that it's due to the amount of time, the screen time that the children have in front of the TV, the computer, the video games. And it's difficult to help the parents understand that these behavior problems are coming from their time and plugged up. They have these problems because they cannot even follow simple instructions. They tune my voice out. They don't have the capability of just holding simple conversations because they are losing their parent contacts, because I feel that they are just spending so many hours a day in front of TVs.
You know, I really appreciate that point, Jessica. Let me ask you, because I think there are a lot of parents who will never hear this directly from their own child's teacher. So you just be our spokesperson on behalf of teachers everywhere. How big a problem is this? I mean, really, you're talking about kindergarten here. It just scares me to think that there'd be 5- and 6-year-olds who already can't pay attention because they're so used to the kind of television environment. Is it that big a problem?
It is very scary. I feel that the parents are using technology, computer games as a babysitter. When they get home, of course, the parents are working 2 and 3 jobs, and they are tired. They want to veg out in front of the TV also, and they're losing their values, and the children just do not have respect for authority, for adults, even for their own friends. They're very violent with each other, and you know, I think it all roots back to their screen time.
Jessica, I want to ask you one other question here. Do you have to confiscate any of these devices from 5- and 6-year-olds?
At times, mostly just CD players and headphones. And I'm seeing a lot of kids bringing in, they are like childlike laptops. I know LeapFrog, and they have their own Leap Pads out. And you see a lot of those mostly around Christmas time and all the technology that the kids have. And a lot of them are geared towards education, and they make them fun. And I believe that technology is important for the kids to get their hands on, and I am amazed at how the kids can maneuver, you know, the mouse and everything at age 5, and then getting through games on the computer. They're a whiz, and I know that that's due to the amount of time that they're spending at home. And it is important for the kids to learn the technology and see how, you know, things work and how to open menus and stuff, because this society is going to really feed for those kids. So
yeah.
But it has both sides, but I definitely struggle just getting the children to understand the words coming out of my mouth, that, you know, I'm saying this one time, you need to do this, whereas, you know, I have a 1-year-old myself, so I don't have the kids in my own home, but okay, Mom, just one more level. Okay, Mom, let me just beat this game. You know, I'm telling you now, it's time to go to lunch. It's time to pack up to go home.
Outside and play. What an amazing thought. Go outside and play. God gave us a great big non-digital environment to go play in, and that's where kids should spend an awful lot of their time. I appreciate that call, Jessica. By the way, I talked to a high school teacher in Louisville who told me that one of her main concerns every day in high school is getting the earphones out of the ears of the kids who come to school already with the earphones in, and some of them will just sit there and stare at her with their earphones in. She even says they come up with ways to hide them in their caps, to hide them in their jackets with their collars going up so that she can't see. And, you know, who would let their kids go with this kind of paraphernalia to school? Would you? You know, evidently, there are a lot of parents out there who I think just are avoiding dealing with the issue. But because, you know, this is going to mean a confrontation with the kids. But parents, just remember, that's why God put you there. Remember that parent is to be a verb, not just a noun. Do it. Stand up. Pull the plug. Set some rules. I'll be right back. Know that something is seriously out of proportion when family members no longer relate to one another, each living in their own digital worlds. Time magazine draws attention to this. If the secular world is concerned about it, we as Christians must be more concerned about it, because we're not just concerned with the proper functioning of the family as a sociological unit. We're concerned with God's glory being demonstrated in the right ordering of our family life, all to the glory of God. Let's go to Isabel calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Isabel.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know, I have a 14-year-old son. He has an iPod, but, you know, he knows when I come home from work, it gets turned off. I mean, I'm a single mom, and I spend, you know, at work all day. I'm not going to allow the iPod or anything to rob me of my time with the kids. So I get home, everything gets turned off, whether they like it or not.
good for you, Isabel, whether they like it or not. They may not like it now, but they're going to be better people as adults and as kids right now. I think they're going to be much better functioning human beings because of the approach you take there. Thanks so much for your call. Glad to hear from you from Tampa. Let's go to Fritz. Go ahead, Fritz.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Mueller. Great topic today. You know, one of the problems, I think, with the electronic devices, probably the games in particular, is the addictive nature of it. And a lot of these kids that are using the electronic devices, they don't have, they're young enough that they don't have a lot of self-control to limit the time that they spend. And that problem tends to compound on itself because the amount of time that they're spending on these types of things, precludes them from doing things that would otherwise develop their discipline and their self-control, like reading a book, or working a jigsaw puzzle or putting a model together or building a sandcastle. And, these types of things can get very addictive, and they really don't. It really lends itself. We wonder, I think, why our kids have ADD a lot and a lack of focus in school. And I think this is one of the reasons, is that they're not doing the activities that would develop that.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, Fritz. I'm also just thinking about imagination. You know, kids that are surrounded by these digital environments don't have to imagine what they're reading in a book. They don't have to come up with the way someone would look, the way someone would speak. The entire world of imagination that is enlivened through literature is missing to them. And I think that means that there's just a whole lot missing to their lives. You know, I also have to say, as we're running out of time here, that preachers find this as a great challenge. Preaching to a congregation that is accustomed to having the full acoustical environment at all times and images and all the rest, and then he gets up to speak. We have a generation that really doesn't know how to listen. Listen, folks, tomorrow I want to talk about something that's sensitive and very important, and you may want to alert some people so that they can be ready. You need to be ready to listen tomorrow. We're talking about the problem of cutting, especially among teenagers. And if you think it's not a big issue, just wait until tomorrow. I'll meet you then. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'm Albert Mueller.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.